It's time for Mac Geek Gab, and I'll bring us our cool stuff found in our gift guide for the week. I like to have a pop socket or some sort of handle on the back of my iPhone, but also sometimes I need to charge my iPhone while I'm out and about. And this is why I like the pop socket battery pack. It's got a pop socket on it. It is MagSafe, sticks to the back of my phone, and I can still hold the phone with the pop socket on it. And that way I can charge, and yet everything still works great. And right now that's available for one penny less than $40 at Amazon.com. We'll put a link in the show notes. More cool stuff found in our gift guide like this. Plus, your questions answered today on Mac Geek Gab 1064 for Monday, November 18th, Mickey Mouse's birthday. It's also Minnie Mouse's birthday, and there are a couple. Is this like Allison and Steve? I don't know. 2024! Welcome to Mac Geek Gab, the show where we share cool stuff found like that. We share quick tips like that, yours and ours, also yours and ours with the cool stuff found. And we share your questions and we try to answer them. We string them together into an agenda so that we all have an excellent opportunity to learn at least five new things every single time we get together. Our sponsor for this episode is Incogni.com/MacGeek, where you can use code MacGeek to get 60% off an annual plan of their data removal and monitoring service. We'll talk more about that in a little bit. For now, here in Durham, New Hampshire, I'm Dave Hamilton.
You almost forgot who you were.
No, here. I almost said something about the weather and then decided not to, but it did sound like I forgot who I was, and that's also not false.
It happens to us as we get older. But I am Adam Christensen here in South Dakota.
And here, live in Dubai, which beats the alternative, it's Pilot Pete. 1064, crime in progress or subject wanted property found? Not sure which one this is. I'm thinking property found since we're going to be doing some cool stuff found.
That's what I think. Yeah, that sounds appropriate.
Got the gift guide today.
Yeah. I like it. Good stuff. Yeah. Don't forget about our giveaway, folks. MacGeekGab.com/giveaway. This month we're giving away the OWC Express 1M2. So go get your, and you can enter more than once. There are ways that we've actually carved out for you to be able to enter more than once. So you can up your chances for that fun little thing. So yeah. It's good stuff. Love it. Shall we we said we would do some gift guidey things. Shall we keep going with our gift guidey stuff, Pete?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a link in the show notes. I don't have any of these with me, but they are rechargeable LED flashlight gloves. And man, could I have used them last week. I put in a transfer panel for the portable generator to go to our home. So if, you know, we get a power outage, just light up the generator, plug it into the house, and then, you know, run things like the furnace and the refrigerator, that sort of thing. And I had this really cool little neck LED flashlight, but my hands were still casting shadows and it was hard to see into the electrical box. These have little LED lights on the thumb and the fingers that avoid that whole shadowy thing. So it's pretty cool whether, you know, working in the dark under the sink in the, in the car, dark spaces, what have you. Yeah. The one size fits all. They're stretchy nylon. And for about $14 on Amazon, you can get yourself a pair. LED flashlight gloves.
Interesting.
Yeah. And they, you know, your index finger and your thumb are what kind of hold them. That's where the lights are. But your fingertips are through. And they're waterproof for the most part. That you can get them wet if you're working on plumbing and. I don't know that I would submerge them, but
sure. I've never been a fan of wearing gloves while I play the drums, but this might look really cool on stage, so I might have to get a ball.
Oh yeah, right.
I don't know why that's the first place my brain went with this, but it is. So Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of what you do, Dave.
Well, yeah, kind of. Yeah. I'm going to get a pair and find a place and a way to use them. So, yeah. Fun stuff. I'm reminded of John Bonham, the drummer from Led Zeppelin, at the beginning of Song Remains the Same, when the stage is black and he starts the intro to Rock and Roll with light up drumsticks, and the kit is his Vistalites, which were clear acrylic drums.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, okay, is there some thing where that makes sense to do? So maybe. The answer is maybe.
Yeah.
But also handy for all the purposes that you just described. This, to me, I like to get every year, I like to get a kind of a handy, and I don't mean hands, but this serves both purposes, but handy, like, tool, gizmo, gadget thing that I give to everybody. Something they'll wind up using around the house. And this seems like maybe it could be that.
Yeah. That was pretty cool. Last year, funny you should say that. Last year, mine was the wool hat that had a little LED battery headlight, which is good for walking and, you know, that kind of stuff. Which now just became my second.
I was just going to say, yeah.
Second.
It's
got a little flat LED headlight in it. And
Yeah, look at that. Something like a beanie with a headlamp.
Yeah, it's a beanie wool hat. Has a little rechargeable, USB rechargeable light in it. Uh-huh. Excellent for walking. Excellent, again, for seeing what you're doing.
Yeah.
But I like the gloves better as far as casting shadows. My hands cast shadows.
Sure.
So when you're doing fine work, like putting you know, twisties on your electrical wires in your main house panel, it's good to see that that's...
All right, well, we got links
secure
for both of these things in the show notes. No, this is great. Pete, you just want to do the whole episode, or should I?
Yeah, gotcha. You guys come back in an hour, and I'll be done. And
sounds good. Listener Craig sent in a nice little catch that he found on Amazon. When I prepped this, the 4-pack of AirTags that Craig sent in was $69.99. Right now it is $79.98. That's still a pretty good deal on these things. That's you know, $20 an AirTag instead of $25 an AirTag. I have been known to buy a 4-pack or two and then just drop an AirTag in each person's stocking so that they have an extra one in their world to do with as they please. So
for stocking, STALK
for stocking. Oh yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Oh no. See what I
maybe
did
not
there.
So much that maybe not so much that. Remember before when we were muting your microphone, Pete?
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'll be
no,
back.
No, it's all good.
I got some stuff for you guys. Let's do this. And this is, I think, good because, you know, you've got the holidays coming up and you might spend time with family. So this might even be some things you want to pick up before the holidays. My family, we're huge into board games. I've got a giant board game collection. So we love sitting around and playing board games, especially around the holidays and stuff like that with family get-togethers. But what I thought I would pick for you all is some versions of board games that I definitely recommend the physical board game, but that also have a really great iOS version of the game. So you could play solo on your iPad. You can play pass and play. Some of these have networks, so you can play across iPads, or even if you aren't physically together, you might be able to play these games. So some of our favorites are Settlers of Catan, which is a really, really great, fun game. I would highly recommend, and there's a very good iOS version of that game. Ticket to Ride, which is also
such
amazing. They've got all kinds of expansions and add-ons and things that you can get. So we love that one. That one comes out quite frequently. And then there's another game called Dominion, which is also excellent and super fun. So any of those I would recommend. And again, they're all recommendations as pure tabletop games or also just the iOS or versions. And you can get them obviously on other platforms too, Android and those sorts of things. But
yeah, it looks like there were Steam versions of these.
Yeah, a lot
of
these are
like
really good on iPad. Yeah.
So now that you mentioned, I just want to take a quick diversion on Steam, because it used to be, I thought, only a Windows thing. And my son had it on his computer years and years ago. And it's basically, Steam is not something to be afraid of. Download it, install it. It's, I guess, would you call it a shell program?
No, it's an app game marketplace. It's a marketplace for games. And I don't know where Apple is with their thing, right? They're changing some of the rules. Apple has banned these sorts of things on iOS, right? Because they want you to go through the Mac App Store. And I know there's been some changes, I think, over in the EU where they've had to open it up a little bit. I don't know. They're kind of changing their policies on some of these sorts of apps. So it'll be interesting to see what happens moving forward. But yeah, no, it's an app store for video games. Yeah, for downloadable video games, but basically.
I guess what I was going for was that Steam is an operating system for these games on which to be a platform to work. In other words, you can't work the games in Mac OS.
They have the Steam Deck, which is a product which allows you to play games from Steam. And I think that I don't know what operating system a Steam Deck is based on. I'm not deep in that world, but yeah, they do have like handheld devices, or a handheld device. I know that's like a mini computer, but I don't know.
Oh, interesting.
If it runs their own OS, or it's a variant of Android.
When Steam runs on your Mac, it's not running a different operating system. It is the App Store for the game to get to you.
Yeah,
it's just in the past, the games that were in Steam were all for Windows, or mostly.
Right.
It wasn't always a cross-platform thing, is where I think you're going with this, Pete. And
I guess that's it. And we like played the Jackbox games.
Yes.
You can get those, on Steam. And those are fun. The probably another cool stuff found then, I guess, the Jackbox games, because you can sit around, everybody has their iPhone, which is their controller device, and the main game is up on your broadcast up on your television. There's trivia games and all sorts of things that are a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, they also have that for tvOS, so you could just play from your TV, or just with a set of iPads and iPhones, or Jackbox is amazing.
It's fun. I agree. Yeah. Fun.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, Paul confirm the Steam Deck device runs a Steam OS, which is based on Linux. So that's where some of the confusion may come into play, too, because Steam, the app store thing, is one thing. And then there's the Steam Deck, which is a computer, like handheld gaming system that runs Steam operating system.
Yeah.
So I think we've confused everybody more than we've.
Oh, no. No, Pete, I couldn't possibly have planned this if I tried, but my next suggestion here for our Cool Stuff Found gift guide is also in the Steam category. It is a smart humidifier. We have one of these in our bedroom. We live in the land where heat is a thing. Like, we heat our homes, and that dries out our homes. And so we are big fans of putting humidifiers throughout the home, especially in our bedrooms. And having a smart humidifier, we've had this thing, the Dreo Smart Humidifier, Dreo. Of course, there's links in the show notes at MacGeekab.com for all this. But this thing, we've had it for about a year, and it is one of the best smart home gadgets that I've ever had, because it takes, for me, that the reason I say that is because it takes a headache away. I don't have to think about it anymore. I program the thing to start a couple hours before we go to bed, and it does its whole thing, and then it goes into dark mode at about the time we go to sleep. It runs while we're sleeping, and then it stops in the morning. It will give me a notification if I need to refill the water. And it becomes a reactive thing instead of a proactive thing, where it's like, oh, I got to go up and turn on the humidifier, before we go to bed, so that the bedroom's this. And it's like, and otherwise you leave it on all day and then you're just burning through extra water. And so having this smart humidifier, it's $90 and it does a fantastic job. And of course it's smart in many ways, including you set the desired humidity of the room, and then it regulates that. It's not just kind of going nuts, the whole time. So This thing's been great for us. I really like it. So
yeah.
Yep. Yepper.
Very cool.
Yeah.
That price is good.
I agree.
I'm thinking I had to buy just a humidifier, because you run them when you've got when you're sick or whatever. Right.
Yeah.
And, I want to say that was at least $40 or $50 that I had to pay for one of those things. And it's not smart. It's just,
cranks out steam.
Plug it in, turn it on. Yeah.
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 Wow.
Yep. Nice.
Yep. I know. It's a good thing. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. What's next, Pete?
Well, here's one that, you could probably, gents that are listening to the show, you could probably give this to yourself and it'll make your wife happy. Ladies that are listening to the show, you've got that drawer with a million batteries in it and a screwdriver and a book of matches and that kind of stuff. The battery thing was a constant thing around our home until last year when I actually bought one of these for myself. And I'm like, man, where have you been all my life? And it's the Ontel Battery Daddy battery organizer storage case. And it comes with a tester to tell you whether a battery's good or not to throw it away or keep it. And it holds, I think, something like 180 batteries, AA's, AAA's, C's, D's, 9 volts, button cells. And that battery drawer is no longer the bane of our kitchen existence because that thing sits, it's about 1 foot by maybe 10 inches, sitting in a little plastic suitcase with a clear cover. So you can see how many batteries you have left of any given size down in the floor of our pantry out of the way. And when I need a battery, guess what? I know exactly where they are. I go right to it. I get it.
Yeah. You don't have to dedicate a drawer to this anymore.
Right. And Huntington, wait a minute. Where'd all the AAA, once that battery blister pack is broken, where'd all the AAAs go? I know they're here.
They're everywhere. Yeah.
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 Whoa. I have worse. I don't have a drawer. I have a shelf and the batteries are like falling off of that thing and rolling onto the floor. And I'm ordering this now.
Yeah. When you go sit on Santa's lap, give him this on your
list. Probably ordering two of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
It has been, it's one of those things that you kind of buy and you go, okay, this will be cool. And you go, whoa, I didn't realize I needed this as bad as I do.
Yeah.
Can you go back to that screen though? I have a question because it looks like the 180 one is almost $30, but then they have a 150 one for 15.
Yep. That is
what's
correct.
The difference?
It holds less batteries.
But I mean only by 30 for half the price. If I'm reading that right, or is that $28.57?
No, it's $14.98 and $28.57. $14.98 for the 150 battery one.
So I'd almost get two of the 150s.
Oh, yeah.
Right, then you get 300 instead of 100. Almost double.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Twice the price.
Pricing on Amazon is always a little weird. Yeah, it's how it is. Yeah, I'm looking to
see.
But
maybe it doesn't have the tester. I don't know. Maybe there were some features. That's what I was wondering. Yeah.
There's another one that holds 93 batteries for $25. So yeah, the prices are all over the place. It's just how it be.
I like the one that Pete was showing there because it's got the little handle you can carry it around.
That Ontel one is the one I have, and I really like it. And you know what? That little battery tester is so much more accurate than. I don't think people know you can test a AA and a AAA by wetting your finger and still putting it to your tongue, and you'll taste a little salt. You go, okay, it's got it, but you'd have no idea. Unlike the 9 volts, remember you touch those to your tongue and you go,
I still do that. Same.
I still do that. That's still how I test them.
Yeah.
That's how I learned when I was a kid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. What's next?
All right. I got one for you again. I'm sticking in the fun realm. I like toys and games and stuff like that. I'm also, as people may or may not know, I am a developer, and something I've always been envious of is people who can do like electrical circuits and electronics and stuff like that. And so I'm always trying to find ways to like learn that. And this one is called the Adventure Kit 30 Days Lost in Space. It's now from a company called Crafting Table. They used to be Inventor.io. Uh-huh. But what this is a little, it's a little kit. It comes with a Raspberry Pi Hero, just a version of a Raspberry Pi, and then a breadboard and all the circuits and LEDs and lights and all the bits and pieces and components. For those of us as old as I am, you might remember, you know, it's like the modern version of the Radio Shack, you know, electronic kits you used to get as a kid, where you'd, you know, put the little wires under the springs and there'd be a LED that you could light up and stuff like that. This is the modern version of that. It's, I think, $97. But then what's great about it is it comes with a QR code link to a series of videos. And basically the concept is you're lost in space. Your spaceship has kind of gone down and you need to like start fixing circuits and stuff like that. So they walk you through, like, you know, starting with the basics, like programming a blinky light, and then moving on to all kinds of more advanced things where you're working with potentiometers and LCD panels and, you know, building a lock code, with a, you know, a 10 pin panel. And it's just really, really fun. Great for kids who are interested in maybe learning programming and stuff like that. You know, you plug it into your Mac and you use the standard, you know, Raspberry Pi, IDE and stuff like that to program. And it teaches you to program and also teaches you to build the circuitry and teaches you the science behind it. And it'd be great for, again, kids. And it's a tiny little kit. It comes in a little case. It's all self-contained. So, you know, a great stocking stuffer, actually, if you're looking for something like that, because it's a really small little kit, but it has all the bits and pieces and components you need to get going.
Huh. That's cool. Gamifying, but kind of learning how to program.
I bought one as an adult, and I've been running through it, and I love it.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's never too late to learn, too. If it's something that you're interested in, it's good, you know, for yourself, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it is never too late to learn. I just talked on GigGab, and the episode won't be out until early December, but I talked with a guy who just decided to become a songwriter in his 50s, like, which is atypical. If you, like, to me, people start writing songs in their late teens and early 20s, and if they don't start then, it, like, I think he might be the first person I've ever met that started in his late 40s, early 50s, and now, like, turned his band from a cover band to an original band. So it's never too late to learn. That's a nice, long-winded way of saying that. Yeah. Huh. Cool. My next addition here is the Sonos just put out headphones for the first time, and people have been clamoring for headphones from Sonos for a long time. These are, you don't have to be, this could be your first Sonos product, right? You don't have to be in the Sonos ecosystem to use them. These are excellent headphones. The quality of them is, like, audio quality is exactly what you would think. No active noise canceling. There is a cool feature where if you have a Sonos soundbar, they have a thing called TV audio swap, where you can have the sound from your TV just automatically go to your Sonos, which it's similar to what you can do if you have an Apple TV with AirPods, right? The one of my favorite parts about these is the case of them. It is super thin, which I love for, like, putting in my, you know, my travel bag or whatever. And then, it opens up and the earphones are in there and they're just ready to rock. Like, so I don't know why more headphone vendors aren't making cases that are, and when I say super thin, it's maybe an inch and a half thick. Like, it's not a big bulky thing. They, they fold flat in the case and then pop them and turn them on. They are Bluetooth, and they have all the, you know, all the latest Bluetooth tech. They sound fantastic, and they're not cheap. They're $449, which is $100 less than Apple's $549 for AirPods Max. So,
and, you know, think, for that extra $100, you could not get a case.
Oh, that's right. Oh yeah. That's right.
AirPods, or whatever Max Apple calls their case, their little.
Yeah, that's right. Yep, 30 hours of battery
life.
What
a novel idea, Dave. Really expensive headphones, and you provide a really nice case that probably costs you about $20 to make.
That's right. Yep.
Maybe even less. That's not a knock on the quality of the case, but like
no.
Point is, like, we know how manufacturing works, right?
Yeah.
You can make something pretty decent for lot of cash.
This is a decent case, and they found a way to include it at a price that's $100 less than Apple. Well, you know, you're not paying the Apple tax, but super comfortable. I like, obviously, high end travel headphones is where I would put these in the, you know, kind of in the realm of things. But they live up to that promise. I used them actually on my train trip down to Pepcom and back, and it was like, oh, this is so nice. So yeah, and. They've got the Atmos head tracking, you know, all of those things too. So you get that full real it's spatial audio, right? It works, you know, it's great. Yeah.
So I've got a quick question, and it may have been a bit of a verbal tick, but it sounded like you said no active noise canceling.
Oh, I'm glad you said that. It does have active noise canceling.
Okay.
It All does. Right. Yes.
Sounds good. I think you were going down one path and then switched to active noise canceling.
I think you're right.
Sounded like you said, and no active.
Thank you.
Like, oh,
yep.
Okay,
yep.
Cool.
Yep.
So, yeah. And my son donated a pair of Beats to the airlines last summer on our trip. So maybe this would be a good.
Yeah. You know, that case would be a good thing to put an AirPod or an AirTag in, rather. So.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
It charges with USB-C. It also allows you to play audio over USB-C, so you can get lossless audio to these over USB-C. You can get lossless audio via Bluetooth, but you have to be using – it's not available on iOS yet. The codec that's required for that is like the Snapdragon aptX thing or whatever it is. It's only available on some Android devices, but it wouldn't surprise me if eventually Apple gets there with iOS because, you know, lossless over Bluetooth, it would be a wonderful thing. And I'm sure it is. I've never experienced it because I don't have an Android phone that supports the Snapdragon aptX thing. But you can get lossless over USB-C. And, of course, you can go from like a 3.5 millimeter jack to USB-C if you need to plug in on the airplane or whatever. Like all those things are supported and all that stuff. So, yeah.
Nice.
Yavol.
All right. Well, I'm going to take us to one that this is a kind of a repeat from last year. We covered it when Rod L. wrote in about it, and I bought one and used it some this year. And then I had some difficulties with the VPN, and it was out of favor. But I've got it. They updated their firmware on it. It is the GL-INET BerylX. It's BerylX. AX travel router, and get that out of the way. It is a wonderful little piece of gear that I have created the SSID that is the same as my home SSID. So when I get to the hotel, I turn it on, and I use my computer screen to log in to the hotel splash page, and then all of my devices, my iPad, my iPhone, my laptop, automatically connect as if I am at home. So that's one of the many good features of it. Let's see what else. Like I said, it supports several commercial VPNs, NordVPN, PIA VPN, all of those automatically. So it's easy to get those in there. It operates on the OpenWRT firmware Lucy. So you can get in there and really get granular on how you want it to perform. It's got a 2.5 gigabit WAN port, a gigabit LAN port. And when I was looking around for some information on it, it came up with a great idea. You can power it with a battery pack on an airplane. And instead of having to pay, you know, $40 or $80 to get your entire family Wi-Fi connected on the airplane, buy one Wi-Fi connection and your entire family can use can use that network on the airplane.
and your Kindle will get online because it knows your home. Like that trick, I want to reshine that light because this is a great trick. Giving your travel router the same SSID password as your home network is the key to this, because then you just connect this and you're done. And this sounds, we tried this in, you had this last year and we tried it in Vegas and it was with mixed results. Sounds like they've upped the game of the firmware on this substantially over the last year.
I think so. And I was looking at a video of a guy who was using it. Now, I remember we were capped at about 20 megabits in each direction, but I think that was the, that was like the hotel cap. And therefore, as we began to use it, each one of our machines came down a little bit. So that was there. But I saw a video online of a guy using this and he was getting easily 900 megabits. Up and down.
Yeah.
Because he connected it to his home router.
Well, so sure. Connecting via Ethernet versus connecting. It was the Wi-Fi relaying in our scenario that was not so great.
And that video, he did the same thing in the Wi-Fi repeater, and he was still up in the 300-400 range.
Oh, that's great.
So it was, I think the hotel was limiting us to 20 megabits per second or something.
Oh, sure.
Top of it. But in which, we could each get 20 on our own machines. If we went to the router, we were down to 10.
That's right. And it was that the hotel limited each Wi-Fi device to 20 megabits. And because this was seen as one, we were sharing that pipe. That's right. I remember now.
But still a wonderful piece of gear.
Yeah.
It just makes it nice. I'm able to watch YouTube TV in Dubai.
because you VPN into your house.
I VPN into the house and, you could do that with others, but then you're turning, is the VPN on? Is it off? And that sort of thing. And, it's still a pain. Now, it won't let me watch the local networks because the laptop and the iOS devices, all YouTube TV demands to know your location.
Yes.
And
yes. They have to. I think that's part of their license. So, yeah.
Exactly. So
interesting.
Don't watch the networks that much anyway.
So. Right. Yeah. I watch the networks through channels, no matter where I am.
I do the same.
Yeah.
So, but the TV everywhere doesn't let me watch then the movie channels. I don't get those.
Correct.
In channels.
Oh, great. Right. Yeah. Good point. So you got to bounce back and forth. Oh yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah. Great. My next contribution, which I think is my last, at least as far as I have on my list, is something we have had for a very long time in our house. And as our kids moved to their own homes on the other side of the state and on the other side of the world, we made sure to get them these. This is the Skylight frame. It is. I've tested a lot of the different digital photo frames. It's Wi-Fi connected photo frame that you can. There's an app you can use to send photos to it. You can also just forward photos to an email address that you set up with Skylight, and that also works. So whatever way you want to do it, and it's simple. It just works. When new photos come in, they just get part of the rotation. And it will expire old ones out, but it supports, 8,000 photos on the original one, which is what we all have, the 10-inch original. They do now have a 15. The 10-inch original is available for $140. They have a new 15-inch frame that is, I think, about $189 or maybe a little more. And then they've got the Skylight Frame 2, which supports video and some other things like sort of baked into it. So there's different versions and sizes, but we all have the 10-inch versions in our respective homes, and it's awesome. It's a really cool way. A, we just get to see family photos or whatever photos we want. For us, it's mostly family photos just on rotation in the kitchen. But if, our daughter in Italy takes some pictures and she can just forward those to the frame, and now we've got those, and it just appears for us. And it's like, oh, there's a little gift. Like if the frame shows up, it's like, you have no photos. Tap the thing on the frame and it shows us the new pictures. It's like, oh, look, there's Sky, and it's cool. So
That's awesome.
Yeah, it really, yeah. It's one of my favorite uses of technology to just kind of bring us all closer together in a very low friction way. You just send the pictures and you're done. And I'll often sit like in my hotel room at night, like when we were at Disney, I would sit in my hotel room at night after I took a bunch of pictures and be like, all right, I'm going to send these off. And then we get home and there's like, you know, 40 new pictures from all the days that we were at Disney kind of pulled together. And it's like, oh yeah, look, we just got back and now we can see those photos. It makes that process just, and it's on all the time in our kitchen, which is kind of part of the thing I love. It's just there like a photo would be. So yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
We gave our daughter one similar to that when she went off to college. And so, yeah, I have, problem is you got to remember to put the photo, mail the photos to her. It's actually, that's how we do it is we email, send it to an email address. Yeah.
Yep.
And so very cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I think we've talked about some version of this before or not. The one I have is the Wonder Boom. I've got the Wonder Boom 3, which is a little portable speaker. It's about the size of a softball. The Wonder Boom 4 is now out, which is USB-C, as I recall. This one is a micro USB charging thing, but many, many, many hours on it. It is pairable with the other Wonder Booms, so you could do a stereo setup. My first question is, I'm walking up the stairs of the airplane to my first officer as he's about to do the walk around, is classic rock or country?
Sure.
And he's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
And then I have this set up. So we have nice music. I use my Sirius XM app on my iPad and play music while we're doing the setup. Sometimes you're sitting there for an hour, hour and a half waiting to go. And so you've got, you know, a nice little music feed and the sound on it is fantastic. The plus and the negative on it, those are actually volume control buttons.
Cool.
So Bluetooth in.
Describe for people how big it is if they're not watching the video.
Again, probably about a little bigger than a softball, but okay, not much.
Great.
Totally waterproof. It you could toss it in water and it would be fine. It's got a little bit of a, I guess they call it a harness or a tether. It's elastic.
Oh, okay.
But man, it is strong. I hang it on the outside of my backpack. Yeah, with a carabiner. And so it isn't taking up valuable space inside my backpack. Huh. And it, you know, it's, I think, pause and continue. Power button on the front, pause and continue in the center, and a Bluetooth pairing, forcing pairing mode in the
this
back.
This is
and
from, Ultimate Ears, which is now Ultimate owned by Ears. Logitech. Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah.
So I think the Ultimate Ears.
Yeah, very cool.
And then what I did is I took some gold Sharpie on the bottom with my phone number and my
oh, there you go.
Contact information and all that.
Yeah.
So so I could get it back. I actually had a different speaker, not the Wonder Boom. I had a different speaker go all the way to heavy maintenance in China once. And it got back to me.
Oh, nice.
Took about 3 months, but it got back to me.
Very cool.
You probably could use that loop to hang one of those air tags off of.
Not a bad idea at all.
Oh, yeah.
Idea at all.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, then you'd know where it was while it was making its way back to you. Yeah. Interesting.
Well, I glued an air tag using that rubber case thing to the back of my Kindle and got to a hotel room one night and went, man, it's sitting, it had fallen down in between the seat and the bulkhead on the airplane, and there it sat. And fortunately I was able to go back and get it. The airplane had not left as yet, but
that's good.
Nothing like trudging out to the airport at 1 o'clock in the morning to get.
That's the other option. You could glue an air tag to the bottom of that. Somebody makes little pouches, I think, that you can get for your air tags that have like double sticky, super strong 3M double sticky tape on them.
Yeah, it's actually one of those little rubber pouches that I glued, and then I'd stuck the air tag in that so to the bottom of the Kindle. But I use E6000 glue. That glue is amazing. It ain't coming off.
Cool.
So.
Yeah. Well, folks, send us your, first of all, I will include the Elevation Lab sticky adhesive AirTag mount in the thing. It's available for $13 on Amazon. So I'll put a link to that in the show notes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yep.
And that looks like it's, I don't know if it's waterproof. Is it waterproof?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, waterproof air tag stick-on holder, so it completely seals in the air tag.
Yeah.
That's cool.
People say to surface mount it on your bike or your, you know, your paddle board. Somebody's got it on just to show that. Actually, that's pretty. The picture of the paddle board is the Origami Paddler, which is the foldable kayaks that Lisa and I have. Yeah. But yeah, put it on your skis. Oh, what a great idea. Oh, yeah. Huh. It's got a screw top design. That's how it stays waterproof. Huh.
Huh. Fantastic.
All right. Yeah, I'll put a link to that in the show notes. That's a bonus one. That's great. Folks, if you've got stuff to add, feedback at MacGeekGab.com. We will be doing, you know, it's the time when we all kind of start thinking about these sorts of things. So, please.
No, don't send it there. Send it to feedback at MacGeekGab.com.
That was feedback at MacGeekGab.com, Dave.
All right. We all know how we love our tech, but guess who else loves it? Data brokers. These folks are out there collecting, aggregating, and selling your and my personal info like it's on the clearance rack. Don't get caught letting them profit off of your data. Our sponsor, Incogni, is here to help. Incogni takes care of the legwork, contacting data brokers on your behalf to get your info removed. It's like having a data cleanup crew who never takes a coffee break. And this seamless process ensures that your information is continuously monitored and stays off the market, significantly reducing the risk of spam, scams, and identity theft. And with their family and friends plan, you can extend this armor up to 4 additional people, giving them the same relentless privacy protection. Take your personal data back today with Incogni. Use code MACGEEK, MACGEEK, at incogni.com/MACGEEK and get 60% off an annual plan. That's code MACGEEK at incogni, incogni.com/MACGEEK. Sign up. Enjoy a 30-day money-back guarantee to ensure you're completely satisfied with their service. And our thanks to Incogni for sponsoring this episode. Are you looking for a podcast where tech news meets righteous grumbling? Well, if you are, check out our friends at Grumpy Old Geeks. This is not just another show with two old white guys. Oh, no. Because sometimes there are 3 of them. Wait, is that? Wait, never mind. Brian and Jason, with a casual 50 years of internet industry experience, have been podcasting for over a decade with more than 650 episodes under their belts. These guys have seen the information superhighway go from the shiny Star Trek dream of teleporting to work to, well, a dystopian nightmare straight out of some William Gibson novel, complete with legless avatars and more vaporware than you can shake a USB stick at. Flying cars? Ha! Forget it. We've got self-driving cars that always seem just maybe 20 years away. Corporate surveillance, NFTs. So if you like your tech news with a side of swears and serious feels, listen in every Saturday or whenever it is you want to press play as Brian, Jason, and sometimes another guy named Dave dissect what went wrong on the internet. And who's to blame? Don't get caught missing out on this treasure trove of grumpiness. Tune in at GOG.show or search for Grumpy Old Geeks on your favorite platform. Seriously, it's like therapy, but funnier and, you know, altogether different. And our thanks to the guys for doing this swap with us. All right. Shall we do some questions, folks?
Get to some questions. Yeah, I can start us off. Shayna has one for us. Says, my nearly new-to-me laptop suddenly has virus pop-ups, but no virus scan is finding what it is. Help, please.
I think I know what this is.
Okay.
Go into Safari, Settings, Websites, Notifications, and look at that list. Often, and it's usually at the top of the list, is a site with no name, so it doesn't list like a URL or even an IP address. And the icon is often like systems, the same icon as system settings. That is usually where these kinds of things that act like they're a virus but aren't actually a virus, and they're trying to get you to click the link to bring you to some website where you're going to wind up, you know, eventually giving up your data or, you know, whatever, right? And usually it's, I mean, you agreed to let this website show you notifications, but man, like, I wind up doing that all the time because we're so used to agreeing to cookies now that it's, you see the little pop-up come up and you're like, yeah, just allow, just move on. I wind up going into this part of Safari probably once a month just to clear out the things that I accidentally said yes to. But when you see those things and a virus scan can't find them, Safari notifications look like system notifications because they are system notifications, and they can try to trick you into this. So my guess is that's where this is. That's my guess.
Conware rears its ugly head again. It conned you into believing something just ain't so.
Yeah.
Also just be, should you also probably check to make sure somehow you haven't allowed a certain website to do just like pop-ups? Like, could it be a standard, just like it could Safari, just be, like pop-up window? Like,
oh, I see. Like pop-unders or pop-ups, like that kind of. Yes, yeah. It could. But then the site would have to be open for that to happen. Like in one of your tabs.
I've seen it where, God. So where I've seen this happen on legitimate websites is legitimate websites use ad services, and ad services often are now pretty much automated, right? So it's like an ad network where people just go bid for ads and that sort of thing. And hackers or con people will inject bad ads with bad code into ad networks. So you're on, you know, I don't know, CNN or whatever website, legitimate website, a ad loads, and then the ad runs that malicious pop-up code.
Yeah. Yes. That, yeah. 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 So, yeah, that could be it too.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Just another.
Yes.
I think you're probably on to the notification thing is probably more correct, but I'd also check, you know, make sure you haven't accidentally allowed some, because maybe you wanted a legitimate site to give you a pop-up, and at some point in the past, you're like, yeah, you know, like this Apple website that I go to every day, I want to see a pop-up them for whatever reason.
Yeah, I have, there are some in there that, in that list that are on, and I leave them on, but I find for me, it's, I wind up turning, you know, saying yes, and it's the yes. It's,
yeah,
the,
that makes sense.
The allow click of regret. So
be careful out there, folks. Read those pop-ups.
Yes.
Don't fall victim to pop-up fatigue.
Yes.
Or notification fatigue or whatever we're going to call it.
Yep.
And it's only gotten worse.
Dave, I'm sorry. Did you say delete those? I was trying to look some, you know, because we've got the agenda. I'm looking ahead on the agenda.
Of course.
So I missed. Did you say delete those or did you say put deny? Because I have several listed in my notifications that I have deny. I don't even want them coming back.
Well, that's the thing is if you hit deny, then it won't ask you the next time you go there, which is probably a better way to do it. But I often wind up just deleting them. So, you know, just to keep I don't know. But you're right. Like that wouldn't be a bad way to do it. And then that way, when if it is a website that you visit on the regular. Yeah. Not too bad. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, good stuff. And I'm even finding them on this. Now I'm getting distracted because I'm looking on this computer here and finding things. And it's like, yeah, I don't really want those. Like
no, thank you.
Wait, I just denied Apple Newsroom. Why did it come back to allow? Okay, now it's gone. All right, great. I just, not on this computer. I don't want, this is my podcast machine. Don't need the news. No, thank you. Yeah. All right. Now I need to get out of that so that I can find Dan's question for you, Pete.
Right.
Dan asked, he says, I love the show and the three of you have brought a nice newer spin to it too. Great. I'm glad to hear it. Thank you for saying that, Dan. We're always looking to kind of keep things moving forward. Dan says, I have a 2019 27-inch iMac, the last of the Intels. I use it only for personal use, documents, media organization, surfing the web. My last iMac I kept for 9 years. Is there any advantage for me to upgrade to a mini M4 now? I go back and forth in my head whether to try to get the money together now and pull the plug or just ride this one out for another couple of years and then get the newest then. Thanks for any advice.
Okay, Dan. Take out your notepad and write this down because here's your clear answer. It depends. Sorry. I had to do it. Yeah. It depends. So, and it does. I mean, this is the most personal of questions. And he says what he uses it for. And the one that kind of caught my eye is media organization. Okay. Are you doing Handbrake and that sort of thing? Then maybe you do want to upgrade. And when I wrote back to Dan, I told him of the story of why I upgraded from my Intel Mac to my first MacBook Pro with an Apple silicone chip in it, which was my nephew showed up at the house with a base MacBook Air M1. And that thing absolutely smoked the benchmarks on my MacBook Pro. I'm like, oh my, this is amazing. So I upgraded right away because I wanted to be able to use Handbrake to convert MKVs to MP4s and do that sort of thing and do it quickly and efficiently. So if all you're going to do is web surf and email and write some documents and pages and perhaps use numbers for spreadsheets, that sort of thing, I'd keep that beautiful 27-inch iMac going as long as I could. What a beautiful monitor. I mean, I'm of the age when the largest TV you could get in your home was a 25-inch 480-line color console that was a heavy piece of furniture. Now you've got this ultra-high-definition, beautiful monitor that you could convert that into eventually. I love that. I love that machine, and I would keep it if that's all you're using it for. If you're going to do any heavy crunching, yeah, you will not be disappointed with the M series of chips that Apple puts out. So how's that for a clear, definite maybe?
I agree 100% with Pete. I am rocking right now a 2019, what is this, a 16-inch? I can't remember what the size, MacBook Pro. And I am going to ride this machine until it dies before I'm going to replace it. I mean, until it's just completely obsolete, but it runs the current operating system. It does everything I need to do. I can still record and edit podcasts on it, which is probably the heaviest lifting I do these days. Until you have a need for it, I feel like you're really better off waiting. And then the answer is, when you do need a machine for whatever reason, a new machine, buy the machine at that moment, because another question that comes up with this is like, should I wait? Because there's a new one around the corner. No, buy the machine when you need it. Buy the most of everything that you can get, because that's another common question. How much storage? How much RAM? Buy what you can afford, the best machine you can afford for the time that you need it, and then move on with your life. And that's like legitimately the answer, in my opinion, every single time. Don't wait. Don't worry. Don't go, what if there's going to be something better around the corner? Get the machine you need when you need it.
When you need
it. Get the most machine that you can reasonably afford. Like, don't go into debt to get, extra stuff. Get the best one that you can afford and then enjoy it until the next time you need to do the same thing.
I also agree. In fact, I can sort of speak more specifically to this because that computer that Dan is talking about is exactly what I had in front of me up until that lightning event in our neighborhood a year and a half ago. And it still sits.
Hold on, Dave, you got hit by lightning in your neighborhood?
Yeah,
I'm shocked.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And it turned, and I'm super protected here. Like, I've learned so much living in this house. The direct buried cable taught me a lot. Ethernet cable taught me a lot about how lightning works, but that event taught me more about how lightning works. And it doesn't matter that everything is surge protected, both DC and AC. If the lightning is close enough to the device, it just fries it through the air and there's nothing you could have done about it. So and that's how I bought two Macs in 1 week and then a lot of ramen. But I like that's the computer that I had here, and it still sits on the floor of my office because I mentioned recently, you know, I have I believe that it will come back to life. I know it's ridiculous. I just got to get rid of it. But it's crazy because the hardware in there, it's the monitor that died on that one, the backlight for the monitor. If I shine a flashlight at it, I can actually kind of get it to work. It's not really optimal for like work or anything else, but it was optimal for getting data off of it. So that was good. But and I think I did one show once I got it set up. I did one show right with the iMac, that iMac right here with the dead screen, and then a monitor in front of it that was mirroring the iMac screen so that I could function on this thing while I was still trying to get the Mac Studio that I replaced it with. It was a whole thing. But I would still have that Mac. Like, I would not have replaced it yet. I did not need to until it stopped functioning. And then it was like, okay, well, I could pay a bunch of money to replace the backlight on this, or I could just buy a new computer. And it was like, A, I'll upgrade to Apple Silicon. It's not the worst thing to happen to the studio. And B, I can do that and be done by the end of the day versus the iMac repair would have taken longer. And I would have had to kind of come up with a new workflow for doing podcasts for a few days and like all of that. So I was like, yeah, never mind. I'll just bite the bullet. So, yes, keep it. Your advice, Adam, and yours too, Pete. I'm right there. You keep it until you have to. And then when you have to, go nuts. So, yeah.
Yeah. And you will like the Apple M1 chip, chips.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. They're amazing.
Yeah. It's amazing. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's a whole different world. It really is. And I will say, especially on a laptop, like, do I notice the difference between Apple Silicon and Intel here in the studio? Sometimes. But not like functionally, it all is just kind of the same. It's like that machine was faster than I needed it to be also. This one's even like way faster, but it's rare that I'm pegging the CPU for any length of time. So it didn't really matter. But on the laptop with battery life.
Oh, great. Yeah.
That's where it's going to make a huge difference for a lot of people. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's shocking.
It's shocking. Yeah, it's almost unbelievable. Right.
Yeah. It's like different battery technology, even though it isn't.
Right. So, yeah, because it's just more efficient. Yep.
Yeah, I have to run my Intel plugged in. Like, I'm lucky if I get 2 hours, 2.5 hours on battery on that thing now. I mean, I probably needs a new battery, but I'll get a new machine before I get a new battery for it.
That's the thing. It's like, yes. And so perhaps what, you know, what I was saying about the screen replacement and you're saying about the battery replacement, like, that is at least how, I don't want to say it's the right way. It is our way of thinking about these things. Like, it's fine. It works. There's no need to replace it. But I'm also not going to put money into extending its life. But would I do that with an Apple Silicon machine, or would I have done that 5 years ago with an Intel machine to extend its life? Probably yes. Like that is the differentiator. Knowing that I had Apple Silicon to go to from that iMac versus just spending whatever it was going to be, you know, $700 or something to get the screen working again. 5 years ago, I 100% would have just spent the $700 and done that. But now it was like, well, I can make the jump and now I'm all Apple Silicon and that's great. So that's a good point, Adam. I like that. All right.
Yes, sir.
Moving on, Pete.
Yeah.
So Roger in the UK writes in and says, why does the return key on the Mac send a message in Messages, but it doesn't on the iPad or the iPhone? It's so easy to accidentally send a partly completed message. Roger, I feel your pain. I hate when that happens. Thank God there's an undo send now. But so easy to send a partly completed message as a result by accidentally hitting the return key instead of backspace. I know I would love to know if there is a definite solution, as Keyboard Maestro doesn't appear to be the answer. Great podcast and tips. Thank goodness you guys produce it. Roger.
So I think Keyboard Maestro might be the answer. I had never thought about trying to solve this problem. I just work around it. Shift return is the thing on the Mac that will give you a return key inside of a message, similar to what tapping the return button on iPhone will do. So I try to be aware, but I fail sometimes where I'm typing a message. It's like, oh, yeah, I got to hit shift return. It requires extra mental cycles. And so I started thinking about Keyboard Maestro. And what if I set a thing where in Keyboard Maestro, I have not tried this, but in Keyboard Maestro, set a macro that only works inside of messages. So it doesn't do anything when messages is not the frontmost app. And it uses the return key as a trigger and sends shift return to messages, and then use another macro, same setup, except its trigger would be shift return, and it sends return. So essentially swapping the use of those two keyboard, keystrokes.
Yeah.
I think that would work.
What about it? I've never tried to remap in Keyboard Maestro, but Better Touch Tool will also allow you to remap.
Yeah, keys. Keyboard Maestro is not the only one. Anyway. Yeah.
But that, just an idea, but yeah. Okay. Yeah, like you say, I never thought of trying to solve that problem. I just knew it was a problem, and I can't tell you how many times I've used the undo send, which I like.
Yeah.
But which is also sometimes difficult to get that menu to come up. But I think it's there because they just never expected you to need paragraphs within messages. Wasn't it 142 characters limited when it was first designed? And
no, that was Twitter. But
I know that was Twitter, but I thought messages was also limited when it was first.
Oh, like text SMS maybe back in the day?
Yeah.
I don't know if SMS had a text limit or not. But it's funny. I use the shift return, soft return, whatever it's called, all the time in all kinds of places. So I'm just conditioned to use it. Like I immediately use it in most messaging apps. So that wasn't a hard muscle memory for me to learn.
I use it a lot, but I still manage to forget it and send a half-baked message sometimes. It's like, oh. And if you send it to someone with an Android phone, they got it. You aren't pulling that one back. You're not going to unring that bell. So Dave looks deep in thought there.
Yeah, well, I'm looking in Keyboard Maestro right now to see. I thought, and maybe I'm doing too many things at once, but I thought there was a way to say you can create a group in Keyboard Maestro that only, oh no, it's, yeah, you say available in these, yes, when you create a group, which is the far left thing, it's like a folder of macros, and so I will make a group called the messages group, and then you say in that, available not in all applications, but available only in the messages application.
Nice.
Right.
Okay.
And then inside of the group, I would make those two macros that change the way the thing works. So yes, that's how we do this. Right.
Right.
So it's not
and
trying
then you
to
have
filter.
To make sure.
Go ahead.
Yeah. And then you have to make sure Keyboard Maestro is one of your login programs. Or that you start it before you try doing this so that it's there and functioning for you.
Well, I mean, no. Yes and no. Keyboard Maestro will it runs an engine in the background full time.
Right.
So you don't need the app running. The app is just to configure and control your macros.
Okay.
But then you quit that and the engine runs in the background all the time. Now, certainly you need to let it run the engine. Yeah, but that's sort of an automatic thing. You don't need to go out of your way to do that. Keyboard Maestro is running all the time on my Macs. The engine is. The app is only running when I'm, like, you know, distracted and doing things that I shouldn't be doing, but while I'm podcasting. But I really kind of wanted to try it. But anyway, so I might. I'm going to ask, but if you have ideas, folks, feedback at MacGeekab.com. Like you said, Pete, Keyboard Maestro is not the only app to do this. Roger mentioned that he had it. So I think that would be the way to think about this. And I know that got kind of nerdy, but I mean, we're MacGeekab. So that's okay. Yes. In pre-show, Adam, Paul Franz in the chat asked that he said, we'd love an update on your Vision Pro usage. How is that going? Are you using it, Adam?
Yeah, this is an easy question to answer. It sits in a box next to my chair, and I kind of look down at it and go, that's really cool.
Okay.
And yeah, that's my usage.
That's it.
Mostly these days.
All right. That's great.
Occasionally,
I'll give you $50 for it.
Take it out to show to friends. I have no interest in selling it. I want to be very clear. I absolutely love this device. I've been waiting for updates, and I know the beta for the 2.2 that does the wider screen, virtual screen thing. I definitely want to play with that. I haven't done it yet. Again, it's beta. Like, it's taking a long time for Apple to kind of put updates out for this thing. We already talked about the fact that I think there's not enough support in the developer community for this, but it's the chicken and egg thing. It's like, well, not enough people have them for developers to want to do anything with them, and vice versa. Like, people don't know what to do with them because there's not enough apps for the things. The technology is amazing. It's still by far my favorite way to watch movies. I do watch movies on it. I haven't recently just because there hasn't been a movie I've been really interested in, like, submerging myself into recently that's come out recently. I guess maybe I could try Deadpool and Wolverine, but I saw that twice in the theater already. So but I'm sure I'll do that at some point. I am trying to get back into exercising. So I talked about the cool, I can't remember the name of the app now, but I did download it and I purchased a year subscription for it. It's like one of those punch beat apps where you play music and you do virtual boxing thing. And that blew me away. Like, it is an amazing, amazing piece of technology. I think it's, again, still the best AR experience you can get in anything that's out on the market right now. As far as I know, I haven't tried a lot of the other stuff, but just from, I watch a lot of people who talk about this stuff and try all the kinds of headsets, and they all kind of say that. So I believe that to still be true. Although, you know, people are catching up. So that's a good thing, though, because I think what it leads to is whatever the next generation is, and the next generation is down the line. I bought this device knowing that I was going to be an early adopter and all of these things were going to be true, that it was probably going to sit unused a lot of the time. But I love the fact that I have it. I was able to afford it. I didn't buy an iPhone for a year so that I could have extra money to put towards this. Like, it was a conscious purchase and conscious all the way through to knowing that, you know, there's been many times in life where it's like, I want to have the very first piece of an Apple technology. You know, this is like I'm at the age now, like, had I been at the age where I could have afforded the very first Mac, I would have bought one of those things. And they were like, what, $3,500 in 1984? Like, that's crazy. And they didn't do much. Let's be honest. They did not do a whole lot of stuff.
Like, it's true. It was, you're right. That's a really, I love that analogy, because the first Mac that came out, you could do work on it, and certainly you can do work on this, but the most of the people, even the companies that bought them, were buying it for what it could be and the vision of what it was. That's interesting.
This is my supporting and early adopting technology that I just, and it's cool out of the gate. And the Mac was cool for its time out of the gate. Like, it was an amazing piece of technology. And so I was at a point in my life where I'm able to do it. And it's like, I have it. Like, if I was really smart, I would have bought two and left one in the shrink wrap and then 20 years sell it for like a couple $100,000.
Sure.
Right. Because you know that's coming, because not a lot of people bought these.
You can still do that, Adam.
Super rare.
Yeah.
I probably should. Yeah. Like, if I'm smart, not a bad investment. Probably.
Probably. Yeah. But,
Funny. Yeah.
But no, I mean, again, I here's the thing. This version of it is not going to be obsolete in 3 years. So when it does go mainstream, right?
Yep.
And I think it's still going to be good. Like, I don't see, it's going to have features in it that the inexpensive version will not have for years. Right?
Yes.
So they're going to be taking things away when they make it cheaper. It's going to be, the first versions will be, the less expensive versions will be less than, but in terms of some of the technologies, like, it's going to have a better processor and some of those things, but like, it's not going to have some of the other features. Yeah. Right? We know that they have to take certain things out to get the cost down, at least in the short term. So I'm talking a year, 2 years, like what the next version or next version might be. But those are the versions that will then bring more developers and more apps and more functionality. And I'll have the thing to already. I'll just use my thing until, you know, 5 years, 10 years, I replace it with whatever the next cool thing is, just like I do with my Mac. So, you know, I don't feel like duped or bad about it. It's just, you know, and again, I don't have, the other thing is I don't have an M1 Mac. So the screen thing, it works with my Intel one, but it's very slow and kind of choppy. Mm. So when I upgrade my Mac, which I eventually will do, I will probably use that feature more too. So I do have my work one. So I will try that, you know, with the beta, now that the beta is out. I just haven't yet. And I'm sure that's going to be amazing. And that's probably going to change my initial experience of it with trying to use it as for work. You know, it was kind of limiting and how the screens were set up. And really, if I am going to use it for work, I kind of need to reorient how my desktop setup is, because I have two monitors in front of me now, and it's really weird to have a virtual monitor and two, you know, like, there's a whole thing that
has
to happen, right?
Yeah, your work environment would adapt if you were using this full time, or, you know, much of the
time.
Well,
I mean, really the way that's designed to be used is I have my laptop in front of me and I open the screen and now I have screen real estate. It's not the way I have it now where my laptop's over here clamshelled and I have two displays in front of me.
Right.
I'm not going to want to overlay a display over my other displays. It'd be weird. So.
Yeah. Cool. Thank you. Yeah.
Well, by way of evidence, you know, look at what the Apple TV was. It came out as a pretty wonky media server, and now it's ubiquitous. I mean, there's Apple TV apps on the Fire TV stick and the Roku stick, and the Apple TV itself, the 4K is an amazing little piece of gear. So I'm sure that Vision Pro is going there.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, it'll get there. It just again, but I just want to be honest. When people ask me, am I using it? I'm not using it hardly at all.
Got right it. Now. Yes, fair. Sure. Yeah. All right, we have two things in the Don't Get Caught segment for today. The first, and I wanted to make sure we get to these because, the first one is from listener Scott. He says, I had a chance to test messages via satellite over the weekend, and he says it really turned out to be a hassle, and I figured out why. Once we were out of cell coverage, but I had a view of the sky, I got the prompt on my phone that I could use the satellite, offering me messages, find my and roadside assistance, as well as emergency SOS. He said, however, tapping the use messages via satellite button did nothing other than the button responded by highlighting. So I knew it was getting my button press. Going into the network settings control panel, I realized that satellite was still off. I thought, though I clearly indicated an up-down caret, it was not a pull-down menu. Tapping it brought me back to that same screen. So he tried to turn satellite on, and it would not work. No amount of looping around would get it to initialize the satellite connection screen. My hiking partner was able to connect and send a message while 5 feet away from me, so I knew it was something about my phone. I finally figured it out. I run Tailscale as an on-demand VPN all the time. Tailscale, leaving it on demand, leaves the VPN switch on in settings. You can guess where this is going. Disabling the VPN allowed the satellite connection to initiate as normal. So, if you are someone who runs a VPN often or all the time on your phone, know that at least right now, messages via satellite, for one person anyway, did not work with the VPN being active. I've used messages via satellite. My son lives about 2 hours away on the other side of the state, and there is a stretch of road right before his town where for about 15 minutes, we don't get any cell service. We're kind of driving through the New Hampshire, we call them mountains, but they're hills. So a couple of weekends ago, Lisa and I were driving across. She was driving. I was in the car and I saw the satellite thing come up. I'm like, oh, great. Like my son is nerdy like us. And so I was like, I get to test this with him. And it worked. And it worked at 60 miles an hour. I was kind of shocked that it was able to hang on to the connection. It wasn't just have to stand in one spot. Obviously, I needed to get it near the window of the car, but it was fairly trivial to make the thing work. I was pretty impressed, and I was able to get messages back from him. Like, we were able to communicate, which was pretty cool. And I was running the beta. I don't think it was a beta feature at the time. It may have been, but I don't think it was. But yeah, worked out.
Okay.
Fun.
Well, GPS hangs with you at 600 knots, so 60 should have been for fine. But
yeah, but GPS is one way. Like, you don't. Yeah. Yeah, but you're right. You're right. Yeah, GPS was also being used via satellite in the car to tell us where we were. So, yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. It's like looking at the moon. See how the moon moves with you? It's in relatively the same place.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's so far away. So, but yeah, I got that prompt the other day in the airplane. I was jump seating to work and I looked down and it's like, oh, hey, you don't have any coverage. You can send messages now. And I'm like, but it's free.
For now.
They're going to start charging.
For now. For now.
Yeah. Now, my guess is that at the frequency that we three buy iPhones, it will probably be included for us.
For a while.
For a long time. Yeah. That's my guess.
My guess is that it gets rolled into the top end Apple iCloud premium plan or whatever it's called, right?
Right.
I now I agree with you.
Yeah.
Yes, you're correct.
because satellite bandwidth ain't cheap. Real quick story. I was over central China the first time we had sat phone coverage in our airplanes 20 years ago. And I was relief pilot. And the captain's like, well, you need to play with it and see how it works. And that's when I discovered that once you put your home phone number into the SATCOM systems on our airplanes, it's in there. And there's no way to delete it. It's like, oh great. Yeah. And then a couple days later, that same captain and I both happened to be in instrument ground school, and they were like, don't make calls on these phones because they're like $5 a minute and all that. And I was like, So I went to the chief pilot and said, mea culpa, sorry about that. And he actually was really good about it. He goes, that's okay. You learned how to use the system. And now that you've told me about it, I don't get surprised in a meeting and I'll take care of it. Don't worry about it. Don't ever do it again.
Yeah, of course. But that's great. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that satellite bandwidth is not cheap stuff. So, but other communication problems I had this week under Don't Get Caught, Dave, is I was using PIA, Private Internet Access, VPN, and I kept noticing my tail scale. Whenever I'd log on to VPN, my tail scale would alert me that it wasn't logged into the system anymore. And I noticed that I couldn't send messages and I couldn't send emails, but I could web browse and that kind of stuff. And I'm like, what the heck is going on here? So I did all kinds of troubleshooting. I tried using the split tunnel, saying, hey, let mail go through, let messages go through, and it still wasn't working. And I did stumble across the answer by turning off the kill switch, and which you then turned around and found that as a known issue. Had I just done a Google search instead of use Google Foo instead of trying to troubleshoot using ChatGPT Interactive, troubleshooting, I probably would have found that issue a whole lot sooner. But for whatever reason, the kill switch in PIA VPN, when you enable that, it works.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
There is zero leakage. And for whatever reason, messages in mail and tail scale are seen as leaks by PIA, and therefore it kills it. It does not let those communicate. So once I turned the kill switch off, I was still connected to the VPN, but I got everything back. Tail scale, mail, and messages works just fine. I can only presume and assume that it's working. Oh, and the other thing that it was screwing up was DNS. I could only use in my built-in ISP's DNS. It would not even use PIA's DNS.
Interesting.
Which doesn't make sense to me, but, you know.
But were you actually, or was it capturing that and routing it to PIA's DNS?
No, it was saying it would only use my ISP's DNS, which is Infidium there at home. And if I said, hey, use PIA's DNS, and then tried to go to Yahoo or Google or any website, like nothing, Apple, no. It would just sit there and spinning beach ball.
I have found that, and every different VPN has a different version of kill switch functionality, and I have found all of them to cause me more headaches than I believe it is worth. I understand the value of not and if I were somewhere where it really mattered, you know, in a place where like the government is checking everything. I mean, I know that probably happens here, but it's different. the consequences are less apparent. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
But it, you know, if I was somewhere where I felt like I need to be 100% sure that nothing leaks, then of course I would turn it on. But as a default, I have found it to be a headache. And that's especially true when traveling and on different weird network. Like, I don't know. So I don't leave the kill switch on, but I will use the VPN. And in theory, the kill switch is supposed to only impact those moments when the VPN isn't yet running, right? It shouldn't be doing, like, once you're connected to the VPN, you're connected to the VPN. The kill switch should be out of the way, as I understand it. Like, it shouldn't be doing anything once the VPN connection is established, but that is not how it works
still.
Yes, so that's why I turn it off. It's like I just make sure the VPN's on, and then it's like it's done. It's like it conflicts with itself. That's the part that kind of makes my head go haywire. So maybe I'll send this segment to the private internet access folks, our friends there, and let them know that you've got at least two nerds who experience exactly the same issue with and lots of other people on the internet. To your point,
right,
about searching on Google versus ChatGPT, I have found I recently, because I have a paid ChatGPT account, I recently got the, and you probably did too, ChatGPT now has search built into it, right? So, but I have found that I need to tell it to search the internet for things. Like, I use it when I'm bringing guests on GigGab or whatever. If I don't just know what to ask them, I'll ask ChatGPT, like, hey, I'm having so-and-so on the show. Give me, you know, we like stories on the show. Give me, you know, are there any good stories that this person has told or alluded to before that we might be able to get? And I'll ask that question, and it'll come up with, like, very generic answers, and then I'm like, right. And I tell it, search the web to find any.
Same question, do it again.
Same question, do it again. But this time, also use your web search. And in like 100% of the time, it comes back with, oh, well, there's this story and this story and this story. It's like, okay, but why didn't you do like? To me, as the user, there's no different. I don't care that you have weird walls in your logic. Like, get rid of it. Just, you told me search is there. Go ahead, Adam.
So what I want to know is, after you do that, and it's gone out and slurped the internet for that information, if you ask again, what happens without the search, the web part?
My guess?
Has it learned, or is it allowed? More importantly, is it allowed to learn?
I mean, certainly it's allowed to learn. in that it just slurps data all the time. But it routinely tells me that is not in my data store that was up to date as of October 2023. So, like, I have to tell it.
By you asking, what I'm curious is by you deliberately asking, because maybe it didn't, you know, it didn't slurp in, but now you've deliberately told it, go out to the internet, look for information about this individual.
Yeah.
Consume that information, process it, and give it to me, right? So now, presumably, it has gone out to the internet. If it hadn't as of October, it has now as of the date you asked it the question,
of course.
Is it
just for that session, or does it become part of the general knowledge? Yeah, I'll have to explain. It's a great question. I don't know the answer to it. Yeah. But
you would think it would become part of the general knowledge if it was going to eventually slurp that anyway, right?
Yep. But,
yeah.
I have found myself rethinking how I write queries so that I prompt it to do that right the first time. And right is, you know, my version of right.
So I want to circle back real quickly to a comment you made at the beginning of this, Adam, which is about, you know, government surveillance and such. So I think I'm now on book five of the, about, you know, governments that are watching you or what have you. Dave may have said it, but so I just finished reading book four, I think it is, of the Jack Carr thrillers. He was a Navy SEAL who decided he wanted to be an author, so he wrote a book and he got it published. And then he had Chris Pratt act in The Terminalist on Prime. And I mean, it's everything the guy touches turns to gold, and it's fantastic. So, but book four is In the Blood, talks about AI and quantum computing and where the government is. And he doesn't give any details, but he did essentially say, knowing what I know of what this government knows about us, I never want to send another email or search a website again in my life. And I'm like, you know, he knows an awful lot of stuff, and his books are so accurate because he's been there and done that.
Yeah.
And I get the feeling that, you know, he somewhere at some point he kind of got a glimpse of what's going on and went, oh, they got it all. And then some.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
Hey, if we have this technology, they have this technology, you know, several years in advance of us getting it. So, I'll just say that.
Yeah.
That's right. No, it's true. I had that. I've talked about it on the show, but I had that experience when I crossed the border from the Canada into the U.S. on the Rainbow Bridge. I think the Rainbow Bridge. No.
Yeah.
I think so.
With only my driver's license or something.
They said, all right, well, and this was this tiny little shack in, like, obviously, you know, northern New York, because it was Niagara Falls where we were. And the woman's like, fine. She got frustrated after a long thing that I'll spare you all from, and said, what's your name and place of birth, city of birth? And I told her, and she taps it, and she's like, yeah, you're good. And I was like, this was 1995. And I was like, you have access that fast to every human who is a U.S. citizen, and I'm sure far more than that. Because she was like, yep, I see you. It's like, but there's a lot of us. Oh, man. Okay. You know, I just moved on. I didn't say anything, but, you know, it was the same kind of moment, like, I don't know.
And you wonder how you got on the no-fly list, Dave.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was the day. I do want to, so on that note, on that positive note, I do want to share that my Keyboard Maestro macros for swapping return and shift return worked. And I put a screenshot of them in our, or of one of them, and you can just flip it in our Discord for the live chat, so you can go see it there. But it is exactly as I explained. It works, and I sent a note to Adam and Pete and tested it, and it's friggin' amazing. So thank you for all of your questions and contributions to our gift guide, and of course your quick tips too. We will share those in an upcoming episode, because it's what we do. Thanks to Cashfly for providing all the bandwidth to get the show from us to you. Thanks to all of our premium contributors at MacGeekGab.com/premium. Make sure you check out Adam's new podcast that he does with his daughter, Kenny, the debut film podcast. We've got a link in the show notes for that. Pilot Pete, you have your So There I Was aviation podcast. I mentioned my Gig Gab earlier. I also do Business Brain. Check it all out. Have fun. Don't do anything we wouldn't do. Take care of your shoes. Don't take any wooden nickels. I feel like there's maybe one thing we could say that sort of encapsulates everything I've said and then some. Pete, what does your shirt say?
Well, I can read. It says, "Don't get caught."
Made on back.
Thanks for hanging out with us, everybody. We will see you next week. Later.